Welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives. Because certain songs have magical, soul-changing power, and those are the songs we want to hear about. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and in this episode of This Song, we're going to hear from three artists. First, we'll hear from Jose Gonzalez, and then we'll hear from Trevor Wiggins and Daniel James, both of the band Leopold and His Fiction. And we're doing something a little different in this episode. We're actually going to have two of the artists in this episode talk about the same song and album and artist, really. Why do we do that? Because it's cool, and because we can, and because these interviews were, like, recorded on the same day. And because, well, you'll just hear later why we had to put them together. First up, Jose Gonzalez. He's a Swedish singer-songwriter and guitarist whose 2015 record Vestiges and Claws is a real study in quiet, reflective beauty. He came to the Austin City Limits Music Festival in October and sat down backstage with Taylor Wallace to talk about an artist and a record that inspired his own work. So here he is, Jose Gonzalez.
Hi, we're sitting here with Jose Gonzalez, who has traveled far to come here, and he's touring all over the south of the United States right now, yeah. Every day playing, like, what is it, 16 shows in 16 days?
Yeah, something about that, yeah.
So what was the song or album that served as the spark that kind of ignited the fire towards your career as a musician?
Yeah, I usually mention Silvio Rodriguez as the main artist and his albums. Ojalá que las hojas no te toquen el cuerpo cuando caigan. But I feel like I can mention Nick Drake. Zoe written on a Zoe say. Bingo Moon is on his way. I was getting compared to Nick Drake quite a lot when
oh,
I was
wow.
recording my
uh-huh.
first songs, and when I was compiling my first album, Veneer, that's when I got into Nick Drake and wrote a couple of more songs, and so Pink Moon, the mm-hmm. that song and that album was like what I was aiming at with my album. So a short album with only guitar and vocals and, mm-hmm. and simple but almost droney type of finger picking.
Yes. So is it the sound or his lyrics, or was it kind of a combination of both that really settled in well for you?
I think it was the whole package. The way he was singing, that was different from Silvio Rodriguez. Ojalá que la luna pueda salir sin ti. Paul Simon. Hello darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Don Gilberto. Chega de saudade, a realidade é que sem ela não há paz, não há beleza. The other guys that I was inspired by. So his way of singing and then also the his finger picking that was like staying on the same bass note for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like that.
Reach to his influence today in your music as you continue to make more albums and move forward in your career?
Not as much as with that first album.
Mm-hmm.
Since then it's been more like listening to soul singers like Nina Simone and others. Don't let him handle me and drive me mad.
If you can keep me, I wanna stay here with you forever.
And not trying to sound like that, but just getting inspired by these like amazing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much for being here, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Don't you know that I'll be around to guide you through your weakest moments, to leave them behind you, turning nightmares.
And below me, you can hear With the Ink of a Ghost by Jose Gonzalez. And I hear it, the influence of Nick Drake, and it's lovely. Jose Gonzalez did a beautiful live version of this song backstage at Austin City Limits in the KUTX tent. The video lives at View House, which is where a group of stations that include KUTX, KCRW, and KEXP put all of their best live videos. And yes, I'll post a link to that video on the This Song page for this episode. Before I go any further, I want to ask that if you enjoy hearing artists talk about life-changing songs, then please take a moment to head to iTunes and leave a rating or a review for this podcast. Making a podcast can be like sending a missive into the void. The ratings and reviews help us here at This Song know that people are listening, and they let us know how we're doing. Plus, they help us in iTunes. And speaking of iTunes, when you're there, you can subscribe to This Song, and then you'll get next week's episode with Ian Astbury from The Cult and P.T. Banks delivered right to you. Now, on to our next artist, Trevor Wiggins. He was also at Austin City Limits Festival with the Austin-based band Leopold and His Fiction. I sat down with him and Daniel James on the same day that Jose Gonzalez talked to Taylor. And Trevor, he knew exactly what artist and album he wanted to talk about. And it was the same artist and album as Jose Gonzalez, which was just really cool. So here he is, Trevor Wiggins.
Yeah, a big one for me was the whole album, Pink Moon.
Day one storm, and it was beautiful.
So abstract. There's songs that are like a regular format where it's like an intro, verse, chorus, bridge, another chorus, and it's over. And then there's songs where he doesn't sing on some of it. It's just one guitar riff repetitively for 4 minutes. It's like an interlude that's on the album. And it's like three notes. It's, you know, like anybody could really play it, but it was just whatever he was feeling. Because a lot of those things, he was recording in his bedroom. You know, there's the complete home recordings of Nick Drake, and you hear some of those familiar tunes, and he just kind of reworked them later when he had a better microphone or whatever. But it's just so abstract. It was whatever he wanted to write. He didn't write with any standards or any plan or anything like that.
And you're a songwriter. I mean, you're a drummer in Leopold and His Fiction.
Yeah,
but you are.
Mainly, I'm a drummer now. I'm I'm a failed songwriter, is what
but
I
you
am.
But so. You have written a fair amount of songs.
I've written a handful of stuff,
Did you hear Pink Moon? Like, at what point in your songwriting did you hear?
I was probably 11 or 12 when I actually heard it.
That's early. Yeah, were you writing songs at 11 or 12?
No, not until like 14 or 15. And they're all really bad.
Really, well, they should be. When you're 14 and 15, like, unless you're a prodigy,
no
they
depth,
should be.
No perspective. But my dad gave me the Nick Drake box set. It was all of his vinyls all in one thing. It's this big, great big thing.
To an 11-year-old?
Yeah. Because he
that's a hip gift, man.
Yeah, he like didn't get what was cool for me, so he just gave stuff that was cool to him to me.
So what were you listening to at the time?
At that time, mostly like Led Zeppelin.
To rock.
Yeah, like, because I wanted to play drums, I wanted to play guitar, so I knew, like, everything on album four. I'm, you know, beat for beat, I know all the drums, I know all the bass lines, I know all the guitar stuff, but it didn't really change how I saw music, because that's just rock, you know? It's just, to me, that's what I think of when I think rock, but, like, Nick Drake is a big a big thing, which is weird because I ended up being like a drummer for a living, and there's no
Nick Drake in
my
that,
drumming.
In that
yeah.
But I mean, were you ready for it at 11? Like, were
no,
did you
no.
hear it when you heard it, when you put it on? And you
there
heard,
were a
like,
couple a songs I really liked because it is really mellow and sort of like, oh, this is not what, you know, everyone in school is listening to. I think at that time everyone was probably listening to Hanson or something, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and I had long blonde hair, so I hated Hanson because everyone called me.
Because everyone said yeah. Mbop.
I didn't get it because I was like, what are you saying? Because I didn't listen to any of that. I listened to whatever my dad or my brother gave me. And brother was older, so I always got cool albums kind of passed down. Yeah. But that's probably, if I had to pick one album that really sort of like, I don't know, spawned everything that made me see music abstractly, I can't say that it didn't affect me in my drumming. I do, like a lot of the times Daniel will throw out an idea and I don't think like, we'll play this for the chorus and we'll play this for the verse. It's like whatever speaks to that individual part. And so it kind of creates like unconventional playing, you know?
That's, so kind of listening to your intuition and not being like constrained by
yeah.
form?
Like he'll play something and I feel a beat to it and it's not your everyday kind of, I mean, there's elements of it, you know, the
yeah.
snare on 2 and 4 and something to keep time, but there's got to be some weird thing that kind of speaks to whatever personality he's bringing to a part. And that is a very Nick Drake thing. Even when he did have piano and drums, there'd be parts where he's playing and you can just hear everybody kind of drop out because he just wants to play that part by himself, and then they come back in later. You know, so
yeah.
it's similar to how we do a lot of that stuff.
Well, and how old were you when you kind of understood? Because at 11, you probably heard it and you like,
yeah.
didn't quite get it.
At that point, I was thinking, like, will girls like this? You know, I was not thinking about what I was going to write or how it would affect my process because I didn't have a process. But
yeah.
I was probably about 18 when it dawned on me that it was really unconventional. You know,
yeah.
And then I started realizing nobody else listened to it because I was from, like, West Texas, you know, so... No one listened to any of that.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We were like 10 years behind in radio, so everyone was getting into like, you know, weird Chili Peppers albums and stuff of that you hear on like MTV or whatever. Strange how I heard it at an earlier age, and then it kind of affected me in a different way as I got older.
Yeah,
still,
maybe
I go
seeped
back to
in
it.
Early, and then like once it had steeped a little while, you
yeah.
kinda, it was.
It's like reading a book over and over. You get something different every time.
Yeah.
The other really cool thing about that album, and this is something I definitely, when I was younger, I even tried this. I learned that like Pink Moon and a couple of the other like big tracks from that. Really, the whole album, none of it is tuned in standard. It's not an A440.
Oh,
it's
really?
All open tuning, like D, and
yeah.
all these like kind of weird drop tuning. So you can't just figure it out. You have to find out what he's
the
playing
tuning is, and
then
you
do
have
it.
To.
Which way?
So it has a whole new sound, you know, even now a lot of people don't do that, you know, if you hear that now it's very, you can tell they've listened to Nick Drake or, you know, like the closest comparison would be probably like Jose Gonzalez.
Joni Mitchell did that a lot, like,
Mitchell,
yeah.
Just before our love got lost, you said, I am as constant as a northern star, and I said,
yeah. But that is interesting, like, if what you're looking for in music is, like, you know, some kind of balance between what you expect and what you don't expect,
right.
then changing tunings can kind of
yeah.
really kind of broaden it.
Totally different world.
A totally
yeah,
different
it's
world.
It's amazing. It's
yeah.
amazing.
I've been in this land low, and I've seen it change. I don't know where I can go, but I'll ride this road again.
And below me, you can hear Ride from Leopold and His Fiction. And I would never have guessed in a million years that Trevor's style was influenced by Nick Drake. I mean, Leopold and His Fiction make this soul-inspired rock music, but when I listen, I hear it. Plus, you can see why I had to put those interviews back to back. I mean, Trevor mentioned Jose Gonzalez in relation to Nick Drake, which is just so cool in this we are all connected through music kind of way. I had to put the interviews together. And finally, we break the Nick Drake thread with Daniel James. He's the lead singer and guitar player for Leopold and His Fiction. Daniel is just an electric performer, and he has the best mustache in music, seriously. And he chose to talk about a musical movement that is pretty much the polar opposite, stylistically, of Nick Drake. So here he is, Daniel James.
It's a common question that, and it's an appropriate question,
an album.
Or a person. And originally I was thinking to name an artist who I wanted to talk about, David Ruffin of The Temptations. I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, cause you mean that much to me. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, you brought up someone named a movement, and I really feel like Motown was a movement.
Motown
in
was
itself.
A serious movement,
and
man.
I'm from Detroit originally, for 20 some years of my life. I was raised there, and I mean, it was everywhere.
Just in the water in Detroit?
It kind of is, like, but the thing is, when you're from there, it's just so present, you don't invest in it, because it's just there.
It's like living in Washington, D.C. and never going to see the Capitol.
It's part of the you know, scenery. And you know, I was born in 81. I think Motown was not long gone, but 15 years in the past, so to say, or 10 years in the past, and I never really invested in it until I left and moved to California. And then, you know, it's one of those things you almost take for granted. People say I'm the life of the party, cause I tell a joke or two. David Ruffin led me to think, like, well, I don't know if I can pick between him or Stevie Wonder or The Supremes or, Marvin Gaye. It's like, oh my gosh, there's so much to think about. Because underneath that Motown umbrella is every kind of music or every kind of influence channeled through their filter. If you talk about Stevie Wonder and you talk about Temptations, those are, I mean, in my perspective, they're opposite musics. There's one group was singing all harmonies, and that's what it's based on. It's harmonies first. It was a doo-wop group with a band behind it, which was very unique at the time. And then another guy, Stevie Wonder, just prodigy, who recorded everything himself. And then they just said, this is the, you know, eighth wonder of the world, this teenage boy.
He was a kid who, like, wrote songs at 14, yeah, and you were like, oh!
Track that Hendrix is playing guitar on, and this drummer is just killing it. And I thought it was Mitch Mitchell, and I looked at the liner notes, and it's like Stevie Wonder's on this track. And I was like, I didn't even hear piano. And I go back and listen and realize that this young blind boy is playing drums. And I was like, oh,
I have
my.
Not heard, seen. I need to find this
it's
track.
It's so it's so great. I mean, it's not like one of his hits by any means. It's like just a demo that they recorded, but it made me know that if a young guy from Detroit who can't see anything, who is a musical prodigy, but is sitting in with arguably one of the best guitar players that's ever lived, and he's holding his own on drums that he can't even see this thing. And like, drum, you know, piano's one thing, but playing drums like this, it's one of those things that he'll stop at nothing. He'll do it, and I feel like that's in the water in Detroit.
One kind of commonality between all the different music that came out of Motown is that, like, you feel it all, like, in the middle of your soul. Like, it's a very emotional, like, very, like, real emotional music.
I agree with you. Yeah.
It's like it's created out of necessity. I think that's, like, what I took out of the harshness of the weather. What else are they going to do? So they had to do it, you know.
You're not outside partying, surfing. There's none of that. You're inside of a basement or inside of, you know, Studio A at Motown. It's just like, well, what are we going to do today? We're not going to go walk the streets. We're in here. Let's something. Again, just being part of the scenery there, it's one thing that you just, I mean, I never thought about, even being a young musician, I just never thought about it.
Ooh, baby, ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. Ain't nothing like the real thing.
No, no.
Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. Ain't nothing like the real thing.
No, honey.
Once I moved to Austin, I realized I really need to lean into where I'm from, because that's, I didn't realize how true I can be to that until I tried to recognize that and isolate that and say, wow, this has always been a part of me and I never tapped into it. And then once I did, it was just like a flood. And that's the Motown in general. I knew all these records. I knew them all growing up and heard them all. But the best part is you know one song off the Supremes record and you buy that record, and then there's nine other songs. It's just like, wow.
That you've never heard.
Yeah.
That weren't big hits that still can, like, yeah.
And there's thousands and thousands of songs under the Motown label. Between my favorite era, you know, is very early 60s, like 64 to 71. And there's still so much content. There's still hundreds and thousands of songs that I still haven't even touched yet.
You can still dive in there and, like, explore around and find new.
Every time I get bored, I go to, like, they did compilations every Christmas, and they released it, and the Christmas songs are some of the best I've ever heard. And so I'll get, like, 1965 Christmas and listen to what Stevie Wonder was doing that year, or the Miracles, what they were doing. It's like, wow, okay, I got to find that. It's just an unending quest.
Someday at Christmas there'll be no wars when we have learned what Christmas is for, when we have found what life's really worth. There'll be peace on earth. Someday all our dreams will come.
You guys make me want to go home. I'm going to listen to, like, one Motown song and then a Nick Drake song and then a Motown and a Nick Drake. And I like the idea of, like, you know, a band is kind of, you guys are in a band, so it's a combination of all of this. Like, you bring the Motown and then Trevor brings the Nick Drake kind of, like, out of the box. And and that's what makes,
I feel like, that's huge in songwriting with each other. It's I go through his record collection in his head and say, oh, I like those records. We pull those out and you say, oh, I like those. And then you put all the records together and you say, oh, okay, well, there's some
somewhere
songs.
Somewhere in here is our, like, is where we are.
I think that's exactly. Cool, too, because, like, he'll, what seems obvious to him, because he's so, it, like, Motown is so ingrained in him, he'll throw out an idea and he's like, I know it sounds obvious. And we're like, what? Like, what are you talking about? You know, but then he'll play something that's got that feel to it. And I'm like, I would never have thought to play that way because I'm so used to my heritage music or whatever, you know, from all the Texas stuff. But it's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. It's really great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to listen for all of that next time I listen to your music.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Right on. Thanks.
Yeah.
Live with the trouble line. You're coming. What?
Caving In by Leopold and His Fiction. And knowing that Daniel is from Detroit and that Motown underscores the kind of vibe he's trying to get across, well, yeah, for sure. Leopold and His Fiction actually did this amazing live version of I'm Caving In backstage at ACL Fest, and I'll post a link to that along with the other Leopold and His Fiction videos that are up on View House. You should really see them. This version of I'm Caving In is like a doo-wop version. It's really cool. And Leopold and His Fiction have come into Studio NA at KUTX many times, and I will post a link to the music archives of those performances, because really, can you ever have too much Leopold and His Fiction? No. And that's it. We have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9. This episode was produced and edited by David Sanger, Jack Anderson, and me, Elizabeth McQueen. The interviews were recorded by Jake Perlman. Thanks to Peter Babb and Deidre Gott for their help with this podcast. They do a lot, and we really appreciate them. Thanks to Antoinette Masando for helping me get all of our social media stuff in order. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own most excellent hard-proof Afrobeat. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. @thissongkutx is our handle on all of those. You can follow us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Liner Notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute on iTunes. And like I said, we'd love a rating or a review. Right on. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.